Okay, good morning. My name is Will Ryman. I'm pleased to be here this morning. I've been blessed and honored to work on my organization's Strategic Research Unit for Language Documentation. I've practiced and refined the ideas and theories of Dr. Gary Simons with strong technical advice from Brad Keating, one of our ethnomusicologists. And to them and to the rest of the unit, I must give much of the credit for what I'm about to show here. Of course, any errors and omissions will be totally my fault. How do minority language communities feel about language documentation? Well, many speech communities desire their language to be documented. Leaders among the Kasanga, 650 speakers in Guinea-Bissau, comment that as children leave for jobs in the city, the grandchildren come back no longer speaking Kasanga and not knowing the Kasanga ways. They know that their numbers were larger and now are small, and see that the language will most likely cease to be spoken soon. They appreciate and agree when told that their language and culture are valuable and worthwhile, and they want outsiders to learn and understand their language. Now, how do minority language communities feel about their capacity to accomplish language documentation? If we encourage them, "You should document your language," how will they respond? They may say things like, "Our language is not written. We do not know how to write. Those of our people who write have moved to the city." And they might say that learning to write or type or use a computer is expensive, and it's time-consuming and has little benefit out here in the forest. Let's look at approaching language documentation from the native speaker's point of view. These groups can most benefit from a form of collaboration that meets mother tongue speakers, that is, preliterate language experts, on their turf, oral language use. We have found that this process enables mother tongue speakers to compile and annotate their community's own language data corpora. Since a vast majority of the languages that need documentation have neither an orthography nor a literate community, this method focuses on oral commenting or oral data annotation. Oral data annotation could be defined as recording language information about a media file through audio and or video recordings of mother tongue speakers tagged to the original media file. Historically, any comments on language documents have been written in form. This adds a layer of opacity for preliterate groups to the process and product of any documentary effort. Oral language documentation avoids these problems, minimizing the need to write out any mother tongue content or comment. So we compile a sample of recordings of a full range of speech event types. We comment on those recordings. We archive the complete corpus of recordings and commentary with an institution that will provide long-term access. Now, my focus today is on the center concept, number two, how to comment on language documents. Before we talk about my methods, let's look at what technique has already been advocated. Okay, recently at the 2003 annual meeting of the Linguistic Society of America, Dr. Tony Woodbury provocatively talked about not producing written interlinear glosses, nor written transcriptions of ongoing Chupic documentation efforts. He advocated audio recordings of running translations and recordings of careful pronunciation. His notion of re-speaking caught the attention of my colleague in attendance there, Gary Simons. Gary immediately remembered a principal technique he practiced and wrote up during his PhD research in the late 70s. A first tape recorder is used to play back the original text in short sections corresponding to natural breaks in the text. In each section, the storyteller gives a translation of that section. A second recorder is left running to record both the original text and its translation. Again, we have the idea of re-recording a text, but in this method, pausing the original at phrase breaks to orally insert translations. Going back even further, we can find this type of technique described in 1976 by Jacqueline Thomas in Enquête et description de langue à traduction orale. Please pardon my Portuguese accent. A field manual developed in West Africa for language research. Addressing the linguistic field workers, she gave them this advice to facilitate written transcription and to make their job way easier. Section 4, recording texts. A, make an initial spontaneous recording of the narrator. B, go over this spontaneous recording with a qualified speaker in order to have it repeated sentence by sentence in careful, relatively slow, yet normal manner. So what I'm proposing is nothing entirely new, but it finds new space and purpose in the subfield of language documentation and further reach in digital forms. Now, why do we pursue this approach? Well, we've been unsatisfied with written forms of documentation. It often requires painstaking study to even get a phonetic transcription, even before analyzing for orthography decisions. There are also costs in terms of transcription time, personnel necessary, finances, and how accessible this stuff is to the preliterate speech community later. Many have used the oral annotation method with analog technology. This, however, does not adequately satisfy Himmelman's third characteristic of archiving, at least not in a timely and accessible way. So, we've been compelled to ask, could an approach, an oral approach with digital recording, maintain or even improve the quality, sustainability, and shareability of documentation while decreasing the time spent, the training required, and with a smaller budget? We think so. Okay. Basic oral language documentation combines aspects of each of the three scholars to whom I just referred. Pausing the original speech event between phrases, the mother tongue speaker can insert annotations into the audio stream. So we start with the recorder that we turn on and leave on. We then start playing the recording of our text, pausing at natural phrase breaks, so the mother tongue annotator has time to introduce comment on the just previous phrase into the recording. Both signal sources are recorded, yielding a turn-taking effect in the end product. A researcher at any later time can then manually select the annotations they would need for their research. However, if during the equipment setup, one goes to the minimal extra bother of sending the original speech event signal to, say, the left channel of a stereo file, and the annotation stream to the right channel, upon visual or audio inspection, it is immediate and obvious which part of the sound stream is the original speech event and which part is the annotation. This representation has the capacity as well for automated processes, including machine searchability. Such software is currently under development. For an example, in October of 2007, I spent a week documenting a few small parts of the Kasanga language, whose speakers number about 650. First, I recorded a communicative event. Most of my recordings were hortatory narratives, and here's a 12-second sample of one I collected. Okay, next, I took the recording and played it into another stereo recorder. The mother tongue annotator listened to the process, pausing the playback on a phrase-by-phrase basis to repeat each phrase in careful speech. The re-recording of the original was kept on the left channel, and the careful repetition was kept on the right channel. Please pay attention to the different sets of speakers as I play this. This was to preserve and isolate the new information in its own channel.
Good morning, Betty. 두고개 니아무게 마참
나난디 게라든 데 빠게라
나난디 게라든 가 빠게라
nambana nange changua na tin basa tawa
nambana nange changua na tin basa tawa.
Okay, a question I like to ask my students and colleagues at this point in a presentation is, which channel would you rather transcribe written? And it's usually a rhetorical question. There's so much more information about word breaks and sound samples in the lower channel, that is the new information channel. It really makes the transcription much more simple. I use this process in multiple iterations, always isolating the old information to the left channel and isolating the new information to the right channel. Added here is the waveform of the original annotation we made from the preceding, the oral translation we made, pardon me, from the preceding recording. And note that the original recording and the one labeled repetitions in careful speech are combined onto the left channel as old information.
It's
all on the top line. So the translation in Portuguese Creole.
In the
and then
dry season.
In English.
Duhoge beamge bacham.
Original.
Duhoge niamge bacham.
Oral transcription. Careful speech. Creole.
In the dry season, we look for the means to get money.
Nganandi.
Original.
Gelaven de pagera.
Nganandi.
Careful speech.
Gelaver. Ga pagera.
Dus.
Creole.
Nganandi.
Two old people take out palm wine from the palm tree.
Gambana nange changua na tin basa tawa.
Gambana nange changua na tin basa.
Rapaz,
young man goes to the bush and cut down the bush and bring it home and throw it and then make the stair.
Hey, the main skill necessary for the trainee was how to appropriately utilize the pause button. Synchronizing this with a fast-moving recording is not always easy, but those I trained ended up handling it very well. I realized I needed to devote at least a couple hours to just getting them used to the technique. So we see that there are basically three kinds of oral annotation. First would be careful speech. It could be loosely referred to as oral transcription, as it is meant to provide a clearer interpretation of the phones involved in the diction. As you saw in the Kazanga example, the mother tongue annotator enunciates the natural text slowly and clearly, phrase by phrase. A second kind of oral annotation is oral translation. Each phrase, in turn, is translated into a language of wider communication, and in this particular example, into two languages of wider communication. Third type is analytical comment. Analytical comments are background information of mother tongue speech events, original to mother tongue speakers, made accessible to non-speakers in a language of wider communication. These are comments concerning things such as implied information, cultural knowledge, folk taxonomies, and on. Okay, details of the setup, actual hardware. It starts with a player that has your source file. To that we add a recorder and a microphone, an adapter that can play separate signals on right and left channels, other connecting cables and adapters, and a way of monitoring the recording, preferably headphones and a visual monitor on the recorder. Let's see some examples. In this example, my primary setup, this is what I basically use. I start by pointing to the channel separator, which is plugged into the recorder. It connects the recorder to the two signal sources. The first is the playback device. The second, a microphone sending native speaker comment. Basic connectors and adapters to get the signal from here to there. And headphones for both annotator and researcher. This setup is easy to carry and not very intrusive visually, but external mic preamps on many digital audio recorders of the handheld variety are weak, yielding a softer than preferable signal when using external microphones. A different setup can help the weak preamp situation, and it introduces a battery-powered mixer to boost the signal. This item brings the disadvantage of weight, extra cost, and attracting attention to the researcher, which can already be difficult for blending in. This third setup shows the use of Zoom H2's four internal microphones, taking the annotations in through the rear microphones and re-recording through the front mics. Some signal quality is lost in this setup, however, by playing the text from speakers into the microphones of the recorder. This also makes the process of parsing the recorded phrase segments after recording more difficult. Lastly, if we were to take a couple steps backward with technology, sometimes we need to blend to make use of a hybrid analog/digital system. Many in rural settings are familiar with the standard cassette player and recorder. Plus, there is a great deal of legacy cassette data that will not survive much longer without digital retreatment of some sort. Of course, the downside is that data on analog cassette is not digitally actionable, sustainable, or shareable. A digitizing layer in the work plan would need to be added to make it truly a very good archive. Okay, I worked among the Kasanga. Several things worked well. One, many youths already had familiarity with the equipment controls. That is, they were already very familiar with the use of a pause play button. And we trained well. We practiced a lot. We were only there for a week, and most of the time was chewed up with training and practice, but it did pay off. Now, we got into a few cultural problems that didn't work out so well. We could have given more time to some greetings and going through the village channels. Things went okay, but they would have liked to have had a week to get ready when I expected they would be happy with a day. Now, what didn't work well, culturally, we could have spent more time on greetings. Also, we paid very little attention to the planting and harvest cycles. We couldn't. We were on a schedule from the West, fly in, fly out kind of thing, arriving at peak peanut and rice harvest time, so that they had a lot of people out in the fields doing something that they thought was truly important, as opposed to what I was doing. And I could go on about stories about how the parting gift was not received very readily because of various cultural reasons. Now, with the Gikuyu, things worked well. Where the persons appointed for the work, we had people appointed for us, and working with speakers that were well-versed in the language of wider communication. Unfortunately, these are also the same things that didn't work well. What I mean by this is, for instance, our transcriber for the project was blind in one eye, deaf in one ear, missing some front teeth, but he still did a great job for us. As to the language of wider communication, it was useful to have them have our group, the second group there on the word list, elicitations, be able to read the list themselves, I could escape the picture, the scene totally, leaving the recorder set up, and they were more free to talk in their native tongue about different challenging words in the word list, which was all recorded and analyzed later. Okay. I'm just going to quickly go through the basic proposals that I see for the language data in the red, and leave the rest for discussion. If you want to question me about those later, we can bring the slide up. But I see this data being very useful for historical conservation, stimulation of mother tongue use, language learning, cultural knowledge-based development, linguistic training materials, literature development, oral arts preservation, and for better prepared field workers, field researchers. In conclusion, Hillman's three concerns of language documentation, remember, were compiling, commenting on, and archiving language documents. This method, basic oral language documentation, compiles high-quality audio documents with rapidity. It enables speech community comment with facility and produces data that is digitally sustainable and shareable. That is, we can submit it to an archive. In addition, it increases the level of collaboration with preliterate communities. It immediately provides a usable product for them in the form of valued text in digital audio format. And it increases the amount of data gathered per, quote, linguist hour, since the mother tongue annotators are more central when using an oral process and the linguist more peripheral. Thank you very much.
I'll take questions. Yes. I don't think those are on, no.
Okay, let me take one at a time here. The first question you had was, yes, I did. Left materials. I was able to, at the end of my recording time, burned CDs, DVDs that I left with them. While I was burning the CDs for the Kasanga, the youth of the community were gathering around and listening to them already. So they felt that was a very great resource and something that they could share with family when they would come back to Kanjandeng for visits. They were very happy with that. I need to go back and see just how well received it was, how well preserved they took care of those discs, and maybe give them more copies. Now, in terms of the end products, yes, several of them are saying written transcription is extremely useful, if not necessary. Not necessarily particularly for the documentation process, but for a good linguistic description, certainly. I don't hold this as something that has to be separate or has to be solely oral. In fact, it would be beneficial while recording sessions are going on and the linguist is waiting for recording sessions to end to be able to go through some of the data already and do a little bit of transcription in a written way to make the data even more accessible to people when it's submitted to an archive. Other questions?
I have one actually. It's a really great methodology. I was wondering whether, with metadata as well, for example, is typically written, and I was wondering whether the application of this could be in creating metadata that is oral, for example, whether you thought about that.
That's at least one whole other presentation worth of information. I try to stay focused. Yes, you can. Basically, what we're putting in here is oral annotations are a form of metadata, in a sense. And anytime you're taking old information or the pre-recorded information and adding new information to it, that's, in a sense, adding metadata. And it could be any form of metadata that you choose.
I guess what I mean is like the cataloging information. So
right.
How do you choose which recording you're going to listen to? Or find the recording with that speaker on that story. I mean, that you need typically need literacy skills to find that.
Yeah, that's true.
A lot of the cataloging metadata, though, is in a language of wider communication.
Yep.
What we're after here in this process is specifically mother tongue knowledge.
Yep.
That is not in an orthography or in literate form yet.
Yep.
Just curious questions about your annotator. Was that done live, your annotation? I mean, on the spot, more or less? Or did they have time to listen to the recordings? And did they make mistakes, or did they comment on mistakes by the original?
We did get comments on mistakes by the original. And that is something that, like Hillman was saying this morning, some of that needs to be, how you approach that sort of thing needs to be framed in terms of the kind of analysis you're headed towards, or that you vision for this data. There's always the possibility of studying speech errors and mistakes. So in one sense, a certain portion of the linguist population would want to preserve the errors. On the other hand, the language community themselves would like to issue something that is a bit more complete, a bit more representative, something not to be embarrassed of.
So your annotator was, you would say, up a notch from, or you did make that kind of selection?
Well, you select them based on certain things, one being a facility to enunciate well, and also to be able to understand the various...
Yeah, it is live, I mean, almost simultaneous.
No, I don't do it simultaneous. It's pre-recorded. You pre-record whatever. It could be narratives, could be word lists, could be a lot of things. And then they're coming through and listening to it again, hitting the pause button, and adding their annotation, whether it be slow speech or translation or some other form of comment.
They can take all the time they want.
Yes. Yes, they can. And I like when I can... And with only 1 week, we didn't have a whole lot of time for this, but whenever I can, I give them some practice time. So that, particularly for translation, that uses a totally different side of your brain than slow speech. So it's quite a bit different form of processing. So to allow them to take a dry run through where you're not actually doing the final recording, but having them listen to it, hit the pause button, try out a translation, is very effective. And actually, the recording they have up here, every time I listen to it, I think, man, I should have had him practice one more time before we did that. It would have turned out a lot better.
Just one last question.
Chris Cox, University of Alberta. I was just wondering how well you thought this kind of method would scale up to, say, other forms of data that weren't necessarily single-person narratives. I'm thinking conversations or any sort of utterance where you have multiple speakers involved.
Yeah, I think it can work for that. Mm-hmm. I'm still challenged right now, and it's part of my development program, is how you can weed out from a single recording the different elements of the different speakers. One way that we've used several times now for greetings and leave takings, for instance, simple two-person kind of thing. Usually, they're not speaking at the same time, but sometimes they are. We took two H2s, wired each person with a separate H2, and had their sound files being basically simultaneously recorded. But one was focused with the microphone on speaker one, the other one had a microphone tagged on to speaker two, so that they could be taken separately and orally commented on separately by the oral annotator.
Right, so for something like these legacy materials that you have, more difficult?
Legacy materials would definitely be more difficult. I would want to have a person that's quite well trained in how to do the commenting process to try and tackle that. And it may take them quite a while to finally get something they're pleased with.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much.